Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 12th, 2014. This is episode 1099. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by using our offer code TECHGUY when you check it out. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. At 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Thanks to Scott Wilkinson for filling in for me last week. Went to Hawaii. Little vacation, but I'm back. Tanned, rested, relaxed, and ready to be a sucker once again. Hello, Heather. Amon, phone ranger.
Hello.
Scott Wilkinson did a great job, I hear.
Yes,
thank you.
Fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Of course, immediately I get back, I buy one of these things.
Uh-oh.
An Android. It kind of looks good on my tanned wrist. I don't know why. I bought the white band because I figured, well, if you're going to wear something this stupid and clunky, you might as well say, I'm really, you know, you buy into it. Go all out. Yeah, I'm a sucker. You know, I guess that's part of the gig, right? Is I'm a sucker, so you don't have to be. I love technology. I wouldn't be the tech guy if I didn't love technology and love the promise of technology, what it can do for us to change our lives. And certainly many technologies have done that. The internet, personal computers themselves, smartphones. Look at the difference that's made in our lives. So when a new technology appears, I always, you know, I get a little excited about it. I kind of want to, you know, believe. I'm a true believer. But then there's, you know, as a tech journalist, it's also my duty to be critical. Not cynical. I don't think cynical is the right word, but just to be critical, to look at it with an eye towards, is it really going to change the world? Is it really useful? And here's what I'm talking about. This is the Android Wear Watch. Google announced it about a month ago, Google I.O., and they shipped July 3rd, and I got mine the minute I got back a few days ago, and I've been wearing it ever since. The idea of this watch, just like so many smartwatches, I guess we'll call them smartwatches before them, the Pebble watch, which was a hugely successful Kickstarter campaign. They crowdfunded their way to success. One of the first. Samsung's been doing first the Galaxy Gear, then the Gear Fit, then the Gear 2. I've worn them all. The Basis watch. I've worn the Jawbone Up. The Nike Fuel Band. The Fitbit Flex. See, I'm a little bit... I'm a sucker. And going way back to Microsoft's Spot Watch 15 years ago, 10 years ago. Timex had a smartwatch. Going back to the Casio calculator watch. I bought them all. I don't know why, because in every case, they've broken my heart. They've disappointed. And I'm here to tell you, Android Wear is not much better. A little better, but not much better. These are still, this is something, it happens in the tech industry a lot, especially with companies that are publicly held. You know, they have stock market, people buy their stocks. They have investors. We have expectations. And people who invest in the tech sector have high expectations. They expect double-digit growth every year, in some cases exponential growth. They want to see an Apple, a Google go through the roof. And they put a lot of pressure on those companies to perform every quarter to increase revenues, increase profits. And when a company doesn't, they punish them in the stock market, but they punish them in the press. And while you might say, well, the company could just keep its head down and keep working, they're aware of it. Believe me, they're aware of it. So there's a lot of pressure on these companies to think about the next big thing. Microsoft almost missed the internet. Bill Gates, famously, in the mid-90s, suddenly said, whoa, we didn't think the internet was going to be important. It is. He sent out a memo to the whole company, said, new marching orders. The internet is the next big thing. Get ready, prepare. And it's a lesson they teach in business school, how a company can miss. It's called the innovator's dilemma, how a company can innovate, create something so great and so fabulous, but then miss the next thing. And it's almost hard to catch the next train because you're so busy riding the train you're on. And so Bill Gates very quickly, smart, intelligent, turned that company around. But there are also cases, many cases of companies that saw the next big thing but couldn't turn it around. Kodak's a great example. They knew digital photography was going to be huge and that was going to change their business. Their business was film. And they knew digital was coming. They made some of the first digital cameras. They quickly got into digital. They moved fast, and it still didn't help. They still had to go belly up. So it's not always easy to catch the next train, but everybody's thinking wearables. This is the category everybody's thinking is going to be the next big thing. Now, this is the companies driving this. I don't think you and I, as consumers, are really driving it. Do we really say, gosh, if only I didn't have to take my phone out of my pocket, life would be so much better. If only I could wear some dorky glasses or maybe a giant wristwatch that would keep... Nobody's saying that. In fact, isn't it the case that fewer and fewer are wearing wristwatches at all? And if you do, it's jewelry, not functional. You know what time it is. Your phone tells you that. When Google announced this Android Wear, they said that we know... I don't know how they know this, and I hope they... aren't watching. We know that our Android users take their phone out of their pocket 125 times each day. And we don't want you to have to take the phone out of your pocket so much. So we're going to make, this is a classic example of an industry making something up to catch the next wave, hoping they're right. And we're going to make this Android Wear. But notice they don't call it Android watches. They call it Android Wear because they don't know where you're going to wear it. Well, having worn now every watch, every band, they're great pedometers. We've had those for years. You could clip them onto your belt, you know, little mechanical things that click every step. They tell you the time. Hey, that's good. That's a step forward. I know what time it is. And you get notifications when somebody calls you. You could see who's calling. If there's notifications on the phone, weather and so forth, you could see what the weather is. But I don't know. This is a category that's more luxury than necessity, isn't it? Technology, you know, kind of some technologies you really have to get. When the personal computer first came out, it was a luxury. Maybe parents bought it because they thought, oh, the kids are going to need to know this, so we're going to get a VIC-20 or a Commodore 64 or a Radio Shack Tandy computer. But it wasn't a necessity till business started to adopt spreadsheets with the IBM PC, and then suddenly you had to have a computer in business, a personal computer. And then it migrated to the home, and pretty soon home users felt like, gosh, we really have to have a computer. Same thing with a smartphone, you know. Everybody needed a cell phone by the turn of the century, by the 2000s, right? But you had to. Every adult had a cell phone. Then in 2007, the Apple iPhone came out, and by now everybody in the country, almost every adult in the country has a phone of some kind, and almost all of them are smartphones. That became a necessity. A smartwatch, smart eyeglasses, that's not a necessity. Not yet. In fact, maybe never. It's a luxury item. And I know, I'm just not sure it's ready for prime time. So I'm a sucker. I bought it. $200. I got the LG version, although the LG and Samsung versions are very simple or similar. And it's, you know, it's just like the every other smart wrist device I've worn. It's nice. It's fun. It's cool. It's interesting, but it's not something you have to have. It's far from a necessity. Not even really a luxury. It's a it's a geek status symbol. I'm a sucker. You don't have to be. I'll talk more about the watch. We'll talk about what's been going on in the tech industry. It's the, you know, it's the dog days of summer, lazy days. People aren't doing too much. They're on vacation, so the tech industry hasn't been going crazy. A few acquisitions. Few phone announcements. There's a really nice new phone. Verizon's announced they're going to have the LG G3. We'll talk a little bit about that. Some leaks about the new Apple iPhone. My buddy Marcus Brownlee got the sapphire screen from what we think might be the next iPhone. pretty impressive. We'll talk about that and take your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm a sucker, so you don't have to be. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, here to talk tech with you and the phone ranger, Ms. Heather Hammond, who is also here with us in studio answering your phone calls. We're just talking a little bit about my trip to Hawaii. Beautiful island. You know what we did, which... So I brought, Lisa brought her son, who's 11, and his cousin, Mario, who's 16. So that he had a best friend. I brought my daughter, who's 22, and she brought her best friend, Bianca, who's 22. So it was we had a little condo, it was six of us. It was fun. And then, come Sunday, we'd been there a week, and we were in the area called Wailea, which is really very touristy. Last time I'd been there 20 years ago, it wasn't quite so touristy, but now it was, you know, big hotels. It's become like Waikiki. I mean, it's crowded. So we decided Sunday we were supposed to go home. Lisa and I put the kids on the plane. And we waved goodbye as they flew home. So we're just going to stay a little longer, if you don't mind. And we drove out to the more pristine side of the island, the eastern tip. It's called Hana. And it's still pristine because the road to Hana is such a nightmare. It's like 60 bridges, 500 hairpin turns. Mm. It's not easy to get out there, which is good because Hana hasn't changed much. It's in the rainforest side, so it rains every day. It's beautiful. So we had a peaceful 3 days in Hana. Had a wonderful time there and then came home.
Nice.
Yeah. I'd never done that before. We called work and we said, well, we're not, you know, remember we were going to be home Monday? No. I'm taking the rest of the week off. Never did that before.
That is awesome.
Nice.
Oh, to have the freedom.
Being the boss.
Yeah.
It was worth it. Really fun. I think I went a little native. I've been listening to Hawaiian music ever since. I got the beads. I got the shirts. I've been walking around with my shirt off a lot. I'll settle down a little bit. But if every once in a while I say mahalo or aloha, you'll understand why. Didn't this country have a complete, yeah, and what is that, the shaka? Was like a fascination with Polynesia and the tiki 50s. Bars in the 50s, and like we fell in love with all this stuff, and Don Ho and all that stuff. I can understand why. It's very appealing. It was fun. Very
right.
Relaxing.
Everybody needs a little more island.
Islands. The islands. So you stayed at work. You have been lining up calls for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I am ready to take my first of the day. Who would you like me to talk to?
Well, you opened talking about being suckers, and I think Gordon feels that way, and he wishes there was something about he could do about it.
I'm a sucker!
Gordon in Lakeland, Florida.
Thank you, Heather Hammond. Hi, Gordon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Gordon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I overheard your conversation, and I appreciate the fact that y'all guys... are sympathetic to my plight, and possibly empathetic. I guess you heard both my computer printers. I had a Canon. I currently have an HP. Used to be able to refill the cartridges. Now the computer argues they have the smart chips after a certain number of prints. Basically, you have to get a new cartridge. It'd be like throwing your gas tank or your car away instead of refilling it. It's real expensive. The only two solutions that I can see, and I can't quite get to them, are either technical solutions like tricking the printer, maybe uninstalling some hardware or some chips. And the other one is a social solution, like finding a company that, let's just put it this way, is honest, that doesn't try to put a monopoly on you.
Yeah.
So, in other words,
inkjet ink is more expensive than blood, literally.
Yeah.
It is one of the most expensive substances on Earth. It doesn't need to be, obviously. But that's why the printers are $50.
Yeah.
Because they're making it up in the ink cartridges. So what happened... was there was a very brisk market in inkjet cartridge refills. I never recommended it. This you get a hypodermic needle and you have ink in it, and you take the cartridge and you poke a hole and you inject more ink in it. It's messy. Results okay, I guess. I've actually turned down sponsors who wanted to sell those kinds of inkjet refills because I didn't ever think it was a good idea. I understand the cost, but hey, that's the deal. If you buy an inkjet printer, that's the deal. I agree it's a ripoff. And I think companies like Lexmark, Epson as well, have wised up a little bit, and the costs are lower. They charge more for the printers in some cases. Our sponsor, the Workforce Pro printer, for instance, a more expensive printer, but the cartridges are much bigger, and they don't run out as fast, and the cost per page is lower. The best way to think of this is the cost per page of printing. And in a laser printer, it's a few cents a page. A Xerox machine, similar. Inkjet, it could be as much as 10 cents a page or more. And that's kind of the nature of the beast. Now, one of the reasons... So the companies responded to these refill things by putting chips, as you pointed out, into the cartridges that are copyrighted, trademarked. They're protected so that the third-party cartridge folks can't duplicate them. And then the printer checks through the electronics. Is this a legitimate cartridge and won't print without it? So you no longer can buy third-party cartridges. You no longer, you know, the refill is another issue. Once it's empty, by the way, when it says it's empty, they're not lying to you. I know we all have the tendency to overprint after that point, but really they're not lying to you. It's time to replace that cartridge. You can't just fill it up. It says, no, it was empty, and we know it was empty, and so don't just refill it. There's another good reason for this. In many cases, in fact, most cases on inkjet printers, when you replace the cartridge, you're not merely replacing the ink, you're replacing the head on the printer. And that does need to be replaced. If you think about what inkjet technology is, it's quite amazing. The inkjet, the way it works, is almost a miracle. It aerosolizes the ink to tiny little droplets and then charges the droplets and arranges them on the page at a very high speed. Do you remember the old days? Remember the printers, the dot matrix? If you remember those, the inkjet printer feels like a miracle. It's quiet. It's fast. It prints beautiful photos in many cases if you have the right kind of printer. It's expensive, and any way to get around it is not, I still don't recommend it. It's worse now. Now, I admit they shouldn't put copy protection in the cartridges. You should be able to buy third-party cartridges or reconditioned cartridges. You can't. In many cases, not all, but in fact, what I'd love to do, and I'll find it, I'm sure the chat room can find a list of printers that don't put copy protection in their cartridges or printers that allow that, because there is competition after all, and I'm sure there's some company, maybe it's Lexmark, maybe it's somebody like that, who sees this as an opportunity. Scotland is saying, Scotland calling in our chat room, who's from Scotland, says his printer has a region code in it. He can't use U.S. cartridges. That's crazy. Crazy talk. But it's the way it is. So I often recommend laser printing instead. It's cheaper. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here he is. He's back. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru.
Never leave.
Thank you for filling in. He came up to the Brick House Studios, our tech guy labs, and did the show from here. And I hope you and your wife had a wonderful time in beautiful Petaluma.
We had a great time, yes. Go Thank ahead. You so much for the opportunity. It's always wonderful to sit on the ball and try and stay on the ball.
In case you don't. Did you? Really? They didn't give you a chair?
I prefer it. I like All sitting right. on the ball.
Yeah, I sit on a yoga ball during the show.
Right, an exercise ball, I guess you could call it.
It's a gopher's. I'll give it a plug because I've tried other balls and they've burst, and that's not good.
No.
It's like if somebody pulls a chair out from under you. Suddenly you're sitting in air, and then boom, you're on the ground before you know it. The Gopher Sport Ultra Fit Anti-Burst, that's the phrase you're looking for, stability ball. I've never had a Gopher Sport pop. That's what you're sitting on too, Heather Hammond. You know, I've kind of converted the much of the station.
Yeah, they're rolling all over that studio, man.
Well, I'm glad
It keeps you alert. It keeps you sort of focused. It's good you can bounce around.
It's good great. For if you're on the air because you don't. If you're sitting in a chair, you kind of slouch. And
right.
This
right.
keeps you right. You if you don't pay attention, you'll roll right off.
That's right.
So I'm sure. Did you do for 2 days home theater questions?
Absolutely, home That's theater awesome. Questions. Got a bunch of great ones.
You probably answered every question. Here's one from the chat room.
Yeah?
July 23rd, the Vizio 70-inch comes out. It's an LED LCD.
Mm-hmm.
And you've mentioned before how much you like Vizio. It's not the best, but for the price, it's very good.
Exactly. And they've done some wonderful things this year, 2014, to really improve things beyond the very good level they were before. And that is primarily taking the LEDs, which provide the illumination, the light for the TV, and taking them from being around the edges to being in a full array behind the screen. Now, this does a couple things. One is it makes the illumination much more even across the screen. It's a parameter we call uniformity, screen uniformity. And it's especially important in watching dark scenes, like, say, outer space or, you know, Star Wars, that sort of thing. And also if you're watching movies with letterbox bars, right, which have black bars on the top and bottom. And with edge-lit TVs, with a few exceptions, you get a phenomenon known as flash lighting, which is as if someone were sort of shining a flashlight up in the corner of the screen, and you can see it in these black letterbox bars or in, you know, scenes of full dark like space and so on. Putting the LEDs behind the screen really improves that quite a bit, makes it much more uniform. And so that's really, really good. The other thing that it allows, and Vizio is touting this highly and rightly so, is it allows the LEDs behind the screen to be grouped into zones. And when you have a scene on or a shot on the screen in which there's a part of the screen that's dark, a part of the scene, and a part of the scene that's bright, you can dim or darken the LEDs behind the dark parts and brighten them, essentially, in behind the bright parts, and you get a greater sense of contrast, a greater sense of the difference between dark and light. And this is called local dimming. Sometimes the whole procedure is called full array, for the full array of the LEDs behind the screen, local dimming, or FALD, or FALD. So this is what Vizio is doing this year. They've also, you'll be happy to know, eliminated 3D from all their 2014 sets. They just said, you know, that's gone. That's a past fad. We don't need that anymore. And so none of their TVs are 3D.
I wonder if it's because it's 70 inches that they can't do edge lighting. I mean,
No. It's not true. Sharp has 90-inch TVs with edge lighting.
Wow.
Now, this strikes me also, as I'm sure it just did you, as being, what? How can that possibly work?
Yeah, because with the LEDs only at the perimeter of the screen, how well would you light the center of the screen? Are they mirrors? Well, are they doing some sort of...
No, they're not. It's a film. It's a sheet of plastic called a light guide or a light guide plate.
So they are channeling the light.
They are, and with very sophisticated optics. You have to admire it, you know, because they do get a lot of light into the center of the screen. And on a small size TV, okay, it makes sense. But on a 70 or a 90 inch screen, something like that, it's like, what? How
we
can that possibly work?
A lot about stuff like this, but really, ultimately, the picture quality is the most important thing. And I admit now,
of course,
with a full array of LEDs, you're going to have darker blacks, brighter whites. You're going to have more control,
right, and more uniform.
It'll be more uniform. But Vizio, is the picture on this 70-inch? How much is this 70-inch, by the way? Is it
Boy, you know what?
Is it
I don't
affordable?
Know. I have to go look that up. I'm sure it is, because Vizio generally is very affordable. The 60-inch that I just got in, and I haven't even set it up yet. I'm going to do that this week, so I'll be able to report on it next week, is on the order of $1,800 bucks.
Wow. Yeah. Best Buy says that they're going to charge $1,900 for a 70-inch.
For the 70-inch.
Vizio.
That's, you know, and Vizio obviously is one of the value leaders, really. If you don't go to the Chinese brands, then they really are the value leader. And they are really, you know, coming on strong in terms of raw picture quality. I mean, they really are doing great.
Now, there are various 70 inches. I'm looking at the E-Series Razer. And that's $1,500 list price.
But that's not the one
we're talking about, right?
No, it's not. Probably the E. Well, the E series is their entry level. Okay. And if you look at the model number, here's a little piece of trivia for you. If you look at the model number and it ends in the letter A, like A3, A4, whatever, that's a 2013 model.
Ah.
If it ends in a B, that's a 2014 model.
Ah.
And typically their Razor, what they called their Razor line, was edge-lit.
Okay.
So you don't want to go for a model number that ends in A. You want to go for a model number that ends in B with
so
a number.
I want to correct myself because the Best Buy deal was on the older version.
The older one. Yeah,
yeah, you're looking for a 70. Boy, they make 80s as well. I didn't realize they go up that high.
I don't think they're available quite yet.
But. Yeah. So it might be that, because a lot of times size is more important, perhaps. I mean, if you're sitting 15 feet away, you don't want a 55-inch screen.
That's correct. If you're 15 feet away, you do want an 80-inch screen. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
The believe it or not, the best size, the optimum size for a seating distance of 10 feet is 70 inches. Now, not very many people actually follow that. It's awfully big. And a lot of people, I answered a couple questions about this last week, I just don't have room for that big a TV. Okay, well, then fine. Get a smaller one, but get as big as you can fit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, most people, when they go out shopping for a TV, they end up with a size that's too small. They think it'll be fine, but then they get it home and they go, oh, man, that's a little small.
Look, money's not infinite. Something's got to give. So of all of these features, size, LED, backlighting, what are the most important? What can you prioritize them?
Well, for me, picture quality is always first.
So you got to look at the reviews in that case because you can't judge in the store.
That's correct. You generally can't. Now, if you have a place like Magnolia, which is the sort of the store within the store at Best Buy, you have a better chance of judging the quality. Yeah. But out in the main show floor or Costco, someplace like that, you're never going to be able to judge the picture quality. You really want to go read the reviews of the professionals, CNET.
But Vizio's picture quality is pretty good. It's not
pretty
maybe
darn
not
good
up there with the Viera plasma that we like so much. But that's not available anymore. So
no, it's not. Well, it is, but you're going to pay more than what was originally charged at full retail.
Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I didn't hear it that time either.
Yeah,
sorry.
No problem.
Now I hear it.
So, yeah, here's the M-Series 60-inch. The B is basically $1,200.
You know, all the ones I'm seeing have 3D, so we know those aren't.
Those are not. Those are 2013.
Yeah.
For sure. The 65-inch M-Series. This is the midline series from the 2014 line.
Yeah.
$1,500.
I think it'll probably still be sub 2,000, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, here's the 80-inch. That's last year's. They might not have it up on their website yet. I'm looking at the Vizio website.
Yeah.
And they very well might not have it up yet. Yeah. I've got the 60-inch here at home, and I'm going to be setting it up this week and starting to take a look at it. So I'll have a report next week.
Really interesting. I'd love, maybe at some point, love to kind of prioritize. Picture quality is such a ineffable thing, but after picture quality, maybe size?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I would say that's probably one of the next most important factors. Obviously, budget is really important.
Well, but that's what I'm saying is, okay, so you've got a limited amount of money. What do you prioritize?
Mm-hmm.
Do you say, well, I'd rather have a 55-inch screen with a better picture quality, or I'm sitting, 15 feet away, I better have a 70-inch with lesser
and maybe
quality.
sacrifice quality. Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, is there any way to sit closer? Would be my first question.
Sit closer.
I want the quality, but I'm a geek. You know, I'm a home theater geek, and I want that best possible picture quality.
Yes.
Got an interesting call last weekend from a woman who her seating arrangement was kind of a U shape. And she said, a lot of people sit off to the side very often. And I said, well, then you really want to get a plasma because any LCD is just going to not look very good far off to the side. and I convinced her to go look for a Samsung F as in Frank, 5300 plasma, which Best Buy is selling now for less than $1,000 for the 60 inch. And, you know, Samsung, we also talked about this. Samsung announced that that they're getting out of the plasma business. They're the second of the three, which means LG is not far behind. And so if you want to get a plasma, now's the time to do it. I thank you very much, Apple fan. I had such a wonderful time last weekend, and I appreciate so much Leo's placing his trust in me to steward the show, and I think we did a great job there. Everybody was so helpful. Heather was great. Alex did the TD on Saturday, and he did just a great job. It was great not to have to worry about switching the video. I did learn a new phone system, which was kind of cool. So, Joel H., my seating is U-shaped. We sit on sheep. That's very good. Empower Mac asks, how are the lower end?
Here we go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a supermoon tonight. I don't know. You know, I've heard conflicting reports. Some people say that whole thing of supermoons is silly. Other people say, no, it's real. It's a full moon that is closer than normal. So that would mean what? It's brighter than normal and it's bigger than normal. And, of course, ABC News published stunning supermoon photos from around the world. So it must be real. It's a full moon. During the perigee syzygy of the Earth-Moon-Sun system. It is, frankly, an astrological, not an astronomical term. So that's why some astronomers say, occasionally, maybe you get a higher tide. So we're going to have a little supermoon. It's a good night, let's put it this way, to go out and enjoy the moonlight. Dancing in the moonlight. That's what we need, Nathan, for the next bumper. Dancing in the moonlight. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. David in Erie, PA. Hi, David.
Leo. Hello, Leo.
Good to talk to you.
Hello, Leo.
Hello.
I've been listening to you and watching you since the radio days, the screensavers, a while ago.
Wow!
Anyhow, my question is, I'm fixing to upgrade my laptop. I know what I want all in it. However, problem I'm up against, I got some Samsung Evo SSDs with onboard encryption. Trying to find these newer laptops that the BIOS supports the HHD encryption feature, I've went to Best Buy, asked their geek people. I've contacted HP and others. It's like trying to pull teeth to find an answer, and I haven't yet.
Yeah, this Evo thing is so new that they probably haven't figured it out yet.
My Dell that I'm running is 4 years old. Has it in there?
Well, there's always been encryption on hard drives. That's not new. Mm-hmm. This Evo thing is new. So they probably aren't aware of what is Evo compatible and not. I mean,
Well, my hard drives aren't Evos. They're the 840 series.
Oh, they're just regular. Well, all the 840s are EVOs.
Right.
Yeah.
And just trying, like I say, this 4-year-old Dell supports it. I can encrypt the hard drive, but I got a brand new, which I found out that series does not. The Pavilion doesn't have it in the BIOS. I'm trying to find some that do. I'm sure some do.
I see what you're saying. Okay. So it's not a specific kind of encryption or a specific kind of drive. You just want to, this has been a standard since IDE, by the way, encrypting the hard drive. It's not a bad idea to turn on that hard drive encryption if you're worried about somebody stealing your stuff. Because even if you, let's say somebody steals the laptop, even if they can't log in because you didn't, you logged out and you have a good password, they can always remove the hard drive and try to read it unless the drive itself is encrypted. And this is especially important with SSD drives because you can't really wipe SSD drives. So the Evo is something new, and it's called a self-encrypting drive. So right. you don't have, if you have a Samsung EVO drive, and it sounds like you do, you don't have to worry about it. The BIOS doesn't need to know about it. The drive itself does 256-bit encryption on the drive.
Well, yes and no. When I had it in my HP, which the BIOS didn't support it to turn on.
That's a different, the BIOS, BIOS encryption is the older standard.
Well, this is what Samsung told me, that the BIOS had to be active. You had to activate it. So
you don't have an EVO, Samsung?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I thought all the 840s were EVO. Apparently, some are not.
No, you got the 840s, then the 840 EVOs.
The EVOs are nice because they do it without your doing anything. Mm. And by the way, as far as I remember, this started with IDE, hard drive encryption, was done by the hard drive itself. The BIOS allowed you to turn it on, but all the BIOS did was say to the hard drive, hey, turn on your HDD encryption. So if you're saying, in almost all computers, I think, have this available in the BIOS.
Well, like I say, my HP Pavilion, none of them do. I finally got HP to admit that much. And I went to Best Buy, and of course, they can't even get into their BIOSes to check it. I've called HP, I've contacted Dell, and they basically give me the runaround that Best Buy did that says, just go into your BIOS and enter a password. Well, that's wrong.
That just protects the BIOS, not the hard. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And so, I have searched for like
you're looking for a way to turn on the hardware based full disk encryption, and a number of companies, including Samsung, but Seagate, Western Digital, and others, all build this in. They've been building this in for a long time. Turning it on, I'm trying to think if there's a way to turn it on without using the BIOS. Authentication, or I'm looking on the Wikipedia entry for hardware-based full disk encryption. Authentication and power-up of the drive must still take place within the CPU via either a software pre-boot authentication environment, that's basically BIOS, or with a BIOS password. So maybe they're not wrong when they say turning on the BIOS password is all you need to do in some cases.
No, at least under the Pavilion. I tried that, and it didn't work because I took the hard drive out, used it as an external.
And you can see it. You can see the contents. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that didn't work, did it? that was an interesting way to do that. I'm going to recommend you look at this, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this Wikipedia article. This is a really good way to do it, and especially if you're using solid-state drives, because it's done by the hardware, by the hard drive itself. It doesn't really slow anything down. It's very effective. There have been some attacks, but it's tricky and not something most bad guys are going to do. You have to keep the key in memory and save the memory, and it's not an easy thing.
I actually have got on this Dell, I've got a flash stick that allows it to go through for me. I'm using Windows 98 Pro because I got that encrypted plus the hard drive encrypted.
It's my belief that any system with a TPM module, the Trusted Protection Module, will support this. So that's probably what you should look for. All modern computers, certainly those used in business, remember the Pavilion is not intended for business, it's for home users.
Right.
So any computer that has a TPM module would almost certainly have this capability. Because the TPM module is a module that does the crypto. It's in a way, and most modern laptops do, it's a way of saying, look, this is a laptop designed for security to be secure. Business people should use these. Anybody who puts stuff on, it's the Trusted Platform Module, they call it. Yeah. Microsoft came up with this.
Yeah. On this Dell, which does have the BIOS HDD feature I turned on.
Good.
When I installed the Windows.
By the way, that's just a switch because the hard drive's doing all the work, not the BIOS. It's just the BIOS telling the hard drive. And you just need to find a way to switch it on, you know?
Yeah. Now, what's funny on this Dell, I could do it for the hard drive, but when I installed Windows 98 Pro, it told me it did not have a DPM module. That's why I got to use the flash.
Yeah, it doesn't know about it, yeah. Together with the BIOS, TPM forms a root of trust that I think if you look for a computer that if you're going to you want to do this, it's certainly going to be on any computer that offers TPM. So I would say, given your interest in security, which obviously you have because you want to encrypt the hard drive, that means no one can, even if they get your... See, the real... it's easy enough to protect your data as long as you maintain physical control of the computer. The minute somebody has physical access to your computer, and with a laptop, this is an issue because, hey, they get lost, they get stolen, then they can start to hammer at your system. They can use brute force attack on the password and so forth. The best thing to do is to encrypt that disk. That data then is really safe. It's very hard for a bad guy who is not extremely sophisticated, and I would say it's virtually impossible for a bad guy to get that data. Look for, and so you want this kind of security, look for a computer with TPM. If it has TPM, it's throughout, it's going to be supporting this kind of high-end security, including full drive encryption. This becomes important, frankly, because TrueCrypt's gone. I recommended for years this free open source solution, and we don't know what happened, but all of a sudden, a month ago, the guys who do it, apparently, it's hard to tell because they were anonymous, but somebody put up a thing saying it's no longer secure, stop using it. So now it really does become important to find a... I would highly recommend this if you've got a laptop. If you've got an SSD, you cannot fully erase a solid-state drive. You really want to turn on encryption from the first day you use it. And I think you want TPM built into it. And we're all kind of hyper aware of this now after all these NSA spying revelations and everything. David, short of saying, hey, can I look at the BIOS and see if I could turn it on? Look for any computer that has TPM. Lenovo, Dell, all of their business computers do. Certainly most of their laptops do. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. And we'll see if we can find more information. And, of course, we'll put it in the show notes, as always, at techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. By the way, do you see how nicely, cleanly shaved I am? You could thank the folks with the H of the box. That's Harry. Harry's Fabulous Shave Solutions at harrys.com. Notice I'm saying Harry's.
Harry.
Sue the writer said, "You say Harry's like it's Harry. It's not Harry. It's not the opposite of Harry. It's Harry.
Hairless.
It's an innovative company that's disrupting. We were talking earlier about inkjet cartridges, right? And what a ripoff they are. Just like razor blades. In fact, that's the analogy. You give away the razor and you make it up on the blades, right?" Razor blades are so expensive now, they lock them up at the drugstore. You have to get a clerk to unlock them. They're like $4 a blade, not from Harry. Harry is disrupting this industry. You don't have to pay $4 for your Gillette Fusion blade. You go to harrys.com and you order the engraved Winston set, or you can get the Harry Truman. This is the Winston. I should show you. This is so beautiful. This would be a great gift for dads or grads. Father's Day's coming up. You can get this engraved with dad's name. And this is the kit. This is what you get. You get not only these beautiful Harry's blades, much less expensive than the big brand names you get in the drugstore. You get additional blades, of course. It's a great package. This is a nice gift. Great for a grad. I guess it's a little late for grads, but certainly for Father's Day. These blades have very high quality steel made in their German factory. The Germans are the best, you know, with blades. Solingen. And then, of course, the very, very high quality. I think this might be the secret ingredient to Harry's, is the Harry's Shave Cream. It's not an aerosol. It is, oh my God, it's so good. It's got that pepperminty menthol smell. Jeff, one of the co-founders, also co-founded eyewear company Warby Parker. You've heard of them. That's disrupting the... again, monopolized, overpriced eyewear market, and he's decided he wanted to do a razor solution, meticulously crafted, great value, dedicated personal customer service, and that's Harry's. HARRYS.com. Shipped to your door, be a great gift, get it engraved, it feels good, and everyone who's used Harry says, this is the best shave I have ever had.
Come on over. Feel that. Smooth as a baby's bottom. If you go to Harry's.com, make sure you use the promo code TECHGUY to get $5 off your first purchase. It's good enough to eat. Harry's, Harry's.com. Just don't forget to use the offer code TECHGUY. Save yourself a little money on the purchase. Handsomer, sharperer, less expensive. I should mention that Steve got the Truman set. Steve Gibson liked the Truman set because he wanted, I don't know why, he wanted the plastic handle. You can get an orange, blue, white, or green. I kind of like the metal handle of the Winston. And then the father and son shave kit is great for a dad's gift if you've got a little son, a little boy. It comes with two blades. One that's a pretend razor. And one a real razor for dad. Oh, if you've got a little boy, this is a great gift from the little boy to his daddy. He can shave with his daddy. Oh,
that's so cute.
So cute.
Oh,
shave with daddy. There's no blade, obviously, in the little boys.
Oh, that's so fun. We have an old, well, video now, but it was Super 8 of my dad and my brother.
Yeah.
When he was like 4, yeah. Pretending to shave.
Isn't that cute?
Cute.
So get the dad, father and son kit. Isn't that cute? One real razor for dad, a toy razor for son. Still get the engraving if you want. Harry's. Don't forget to use the offer code TECHGUY to get $5 off. The Harry's shave cream on the tube says don't eat it. Is it really? Because I did. It's so good. Yeah, it says, caution, don't put it in your eyes. Rinse if you do. Please don't eat it. You know, they have to do, I've never seen a shaving cream say that, but they have to because it smells like it tastes good. It's infused with natural marula and coconut oils.
Oh, that's the secret ingredient.
Marula?
Yes. I've never heard of it. With that in it, and it's just amazing. All right, I'm coming in there.
See? The girls like it too. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, hour two of the Tech Guy show, in which we talk about computers, the internet, home theater, and all that jazz, smartwatches. 8888 Ask Leo. The short, by the way, the short review of the Android Wear is, it's cool, I love it. $200, it's a fair price, but it doesn't change your life. It's kind of cool that you can look at your watch and see that it's 66 degrees and overcast right now in beautiful downtown Petaluma. I could swipe up and see not only the weather forecast, but a Wall Street Journal story, notifications, I have a haircut coming up, things like that. You could send a text message. You can even talk to it, which is kind of cool. This is the LG version of the Android Wear. $229 from the Google Play Store. If you tap the watch face, you can speak to it and say, send texts, tweet. A little weird when you're sending texts because unlike the phone, when I don't know if you've used an Android phone, but you can say on an Android phone, let's do it here. I could say, do I have your cell phone? I probably don't, Heather, so I can't send it to you. I'll send it to my daughter. Send text to Abby Laporte. Hey, how are you? It's Daddy texting from his wristwatch! Exclamation mark. And then as soon as you stop talking, it sends it. Oh, it's Daddy texting from his wristwatch. So the problem is if you make a mistake. In fact, it's already sent it, and so you get some hilarity. Hilarity ensues. Speech recognition is pretty good. It's kind of cool that you can respond to a text directly from your watch. You have to have your phone, though. You need an Android phone with 4.3. And this is true of all the smartwatches so far, except for the Basis, I think. But all the Samsung Galaxy Gear, the Gear 2, the Gear Fit, they need to be tied to a phone. In fact, with the Gear versions, you have to have a Samsung phone. Samsung also makes an Android Wear that will work with any Android phone. We're all waiting for the iWatch. That's, can Apple do this, make the magic that it made with the iPhone and with the iPad and with the iMac? Can it change our perception of these devices? That's going to be the question.
My opinion is Apple probably doesn't have any magic up its sleeve in this case, but we'll see. We'll know in the fall. I mentioned at the beginning of the show also that we are now learning a little more about the iPhone 6. My friend Marcus Brownlee, who is a YouTube video star, probably the best reviewer on YouTube. He's amazing. His videos at MKBHD somehow got a sample of the sapphire screen that Apple plans to use on its iPhone, its next generation iPhone. Apple rumors are of two categories. The Apple information that comes from Apple, I never trust because Apple is so good at keeping a lid on rumors and secrets. They'll fire an employee for just looking at a journalist. So they're very good at keeping a lid on that. So that's one kind of rumor. Generally, don't trust the kinds of rumor that would come out of Apple. But there's a problem. When Apple makes stuff like iPhones, it has to go to China to make them. And the supply chain is very leaky. It's almost impossible to keep those manufacturers silent. So leaks that come from the supply chain, like this is the frame, this is the case, this is the spec, that I trust a little bit more. And in this case, Marcus actually had the sapphire screen. It looked just like an iPhone. Now, of course, it could be a very good fake, but boy, it's impressive if it is. It was clearly a sheet of sapphire. He tried to scratch it with keys, with a knife, with scissors. Couldn't. It bent. He couldn't break it. It was tough. And we know that Apple bought a sapphire, a manufacturer, and is planning to really ramp up its sapphire production. So I think this is very credible. It told us two things. First, the sapphire screen will be very impressive. Sapphire is not a new technology. We've seen it on watches. An expensive, fancy wristwatch will often have a sapphire crystal. And those really, it's hard. You cannot scratch them. But I've never seen a sapphire crystal as big as a phone. And that's the other thing we learned, that this is a 4.7-inch screen, and that would be a big departure for Apple. Its biggest phones up to now have been the iPhone 5 and 5S, which are 4 inches. There's even a rumor there will be a 5.5-inch screen from Apple, which I'd welcome. We don't know if that'll have sapphire on it or not, but my guess is it would. That alone is a selling point, isn't it? A screen that won't break, you can't scratch? That's a strong selling point. Better than glass. And I find this rumor credible because it'd be pretty hard to fake that. Pretty hard to fake that. You'd have to, I don't know how. I don't know how you'd do it. Marcus got a heck of a scoop on that one. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to Holland. Our next call from La Jolla. Hi, Holland.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
About 2 years ago, you recommended a Samsung Galaxy S3, and I bought it, and I love it.
Great phone. Can't recommend the S4 or 5. I think Samsung started to really junk them up.
Well, that's fine. I have a question regarding the S5. Yeah. But I had come from Motorola, and my girlfriend still has a Motorola Razr. And we were navigating through the southern areas of Florida on both coasts, even down to Key West.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing turn-by-turn navigation, and we're a little bit competitive. And I'm waiting for my phone to say, go left, go here, because her phone says, go left, go here, and my phone says, GPS signal lost.
Oh, wow.
And she laughs, and ha-ha-ha, and she has a good old time. So what I'm trying to understand, and I've tried many things. I have the latest operating system.
But you don't have the latest phone.
No, I don't have the latest phone.
Yeah, it's a couple of years old now.
Yeah, but I have a feeling it's an antenna inside the phone.
Absolutely. Absolutely, so yeah.
Okay, how can I find out if, like, the Galaxy S5, when it comes out more?
Any new phone will be better than that.
Will it?
Yeah, those are the kinds of things that they routinely improve.
Hmm.
There's no reason why a Droid would be better than an S3. It's the same vintage, right? Hers is also 3 years old.
Yeah.
But there is that, and we don't often in reviews cover that because it's a hard thing to measure. But antenna sensitivity is absolutely varies considerably among phones,
mm-hmm.
And I think you've found maybe an Achilles heel on the S3.
So but, there's no better program or app
to do the
GPS acquisition, and then
it's a factor of the case of how you're holding it, of where you are in the car could even impact it. But it may merely be better antennas in the Droid.
Yeah, well, okay. And yeah. In about 2 months, I'll be eligible for a S5, so I'll go with...
The S5 is excellent. The Note 3 is excellent, also from Samsung, if you want a giant screen. I carry an HTC One, the new version. I love it. We use using it to navigate all over Hawaii, and even in areas with very poor signal, and was able to it was very helpful to know where I am.
So you say HTC One Note 2...
The Note 3 is the current version. If you like a giant screen, I'm a big fan of the HTC One. That's the phone I'm carrying around right now. Now, if your girlfriend likes Motorola, I think she'll very much like the latest Motorolas, the Droid Max, and which gets incredible battery life. And you might want to wait, if you're going to wait a couple months, have her wait a couple months, because the next Moto X, we're not sure what they're going to call it, the Moto X Plus One perhaps, should be out soon. And that is my absolute favorite Android phone. That thing is
really,
the feature set is fantastic.
It's a Moto X One.
It'd probably be called the X Plus One. The current version is a Moto X.
Okay,
you can get it fairly inexpensively because everybody knows the next versions do.
Okay,
and then we mentioned that Verizon's going to get the LG G3. This is a very high. Are you on Verizon?
Yes.
This is a very high-end, very interesting phone. Forbes yesterday called it the perfect smartphone. I haven't tried it yet, but it's got a big screen. It is gorgeous. It is the highest resolution screen we've ever seen. It's an Ultra HD screen. That may not be important, but a removable battery is. That's one of the features of the S3 that's fabulous, that's missing on the HTC One and the Moto X. I like the ability to have a second battery, especially when you're traveling. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Desert Dog in our chat room has a message for our previous caller. He said, the Galaxy S3 is known to have a GPS problem. To fix it, tighten the screws in the back. Okay, take that as you will. Huh? Okay, so apparently somebody's got a screw loose. I'm not sure if it's the phone or a Desert Dog, but you might try tightening those screws. It isn't a bad idea to, if you have a problem, to Google it and do something like, you know, bad GPS Galaxy S3 and see if there's others who've had similar problems. I had the S3. I loved the S3. I don't remember GPS issues, but, you know, I think it also has to do with, you know, where you are and how you're holding it and what, you know, radio waves are tricksy. John and Mar Vista, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You're next. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. I'll get your recommendation on a camcorder.
It's funny because this used to be a very hot category, and much less so now that everybody has video capability in their point-and-shoot cameras and their phones, and it's rare people buy a standalone camcorder anymore.
Well, we do a lot of traveling. We have a small motorhome, and we've been using a Canon DSLR for taking still shots, but, you know, there's wildlife and...
Well, that Canon DSLR has a very good video, higher quality than almost any camcorder you could buy.
Ours doesn't have it, so you're saying we need a new one.
Well, which one do you have?
EOS.
Say again, you have the Rebel?
Yeah, the EOS.
Yeah, you got an early one, like the T3-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, T1s. So that's, they've put video in all of the subsequent models. And the video, frankly, if you like your Canon, I would consider, it's probably, well, you can get a video camcorder a lot less expensive. But the nice thing is not having to carry around two devices, right?
Yeah.
But if you're going to be the videographer and your wife's going to be the still photographer, then that's not so bad.
Well, what she wants it for, you know, when you come to between states, there's always a sign that says welcome to.
Yeah.
And it's always in the middle of the bridge, and she doesn't get a picture of it. We're going 60 miles an hour and can't stop. So she'd like to be able to take videos of things like that.
Sure. Again, any point-and-shoot camera, any... Even smartphone will do that and do it in very high quality. The advantage of a DSLR versus a camcorder is you can change lenses, so you can get interesting and better looking video by doing that. The advantage of a camcorder, well, there are a few. You can record longer chunks. I don't recommend it. No, nobody wants to watch an hour and a half nonstop video. DSLRs are limited to, generally to 20 or 30 minutes. That's more for legal reasons. Yeah, that's plenty of time. In fact, I recommend 6 or 7 second videos, and you watch a movie. Nobody sits on a shot for more than a few seconds. It just doesn't. It bothers people. Somebody in the chat room is just insisting that battery life is an issue. I do not agree at all. A good DSLR has equivalent battery life. And again, you're not sitting and shooting video. The only reason I recommend a camcorder is if you want to record a concert or a lecture and you just want to turn it on and record for an hour and a half. However, if you really want a camcorder, my favorites, in fact, the ones we use in studio are the Canons. Since you already have a Canon camera, you're probably familiar with them. The Vixia models, V-I-X-I-A. Mm-hmm. Some of them, all of them now record to SD card, flash memory, not tape, which is a lot better. And you'll find they start at around $100. They're not that expensive. If you want to, the ones we use are about $600 or $700. They're very high quality with enough light. And I think these are excellent cameras. So the Canon VIXIA, they start at the low end with the R300. We use G20s, which are $800 or $1,000. Very good cameras.
Okay. All right, so that either replace my DSLR or...
This is an opportunity to get a more modern, Rebel. I think it's T4i or T5i now. And, boy, the video is excellent. Did you buy additional lenses or are you just using the kit lens?
It came as a kit with a telephoto and a...
Right.
And a short lens.
So that's something... you can zoom on a camcorder, and it's a little easier. You don't have... You have press a button. It's a motor zoom. But on the other hand, I shoot video with my Canon DSLR, the high-end DSLR, and many lenses. And the opportunity to choose from a wide angle to a telephoto to very fast lens for low-light situations just makes it much better. Many TV shows and movies are now shot with these kinds of cameras, not video, traditional video cameras anymore.
Because we'd probably be doing wildlife with a telephoto.
Yeah. So maybe look at, if you're thinking of a new camera, even a point-and-shoot is going to shoot really high-quality HD video or better. You can shoot 4K video with some of these, which is really high quality, better than you could play back. So, but if you want a standalone handheld camcorder, there are a lot of good ones, and they're a lot less expensive because the market has dwindled for them, frankly.
Yeah.
So that my I very rarely have people ask for camcorders anymore. What I would say is think laterally a little bit. Think to, because in the old days a few years ago, we all had camcorders. When I went to China, I brought a camcorder and a camera. But less and less now, I don't have a camcorder anymore because all of my cameras, my point and shoots, my high end, my low end, and my phone, all take video. And having one device instead of two is just great. If you have a smartphone, you might want to take a look at the video that the smartphone takes. It may be adequate. 8888-ASK Leo, 888-827-5536 is the number. I've mentioned it before. I'll mention it again. The website, techguylabs.com. A couple of people are really upset with me. They say, no, don't get a DSLR or a camera for video. The battery life's not as good. I disagree. I don't know what you're talking about, but... I guess if you want better battery life, here's what you do. Go to the website if you disagree with me. And what we do is we divide the pages. Each show has its own page. And within that, each hour has its own page. And within that, each question and answer has its own page. After the show, we'll put audio and video up there. And every question and answer, besides having the question transcribed, the answer transcribed, the audio and the video, has a comment section. And I would more than welcome any comments you have. Or go there, read the comments, vote them up and down. Because what I'd love is for the best comments to rise to the top. And that way, when you go to the website, you're going to get some, my opinion, but you're going to get some valuable additional information. TechGuyLabs.com. And I'm proud to say it's free. There's no subscription fee. The podcasts are free. The video's free. The audio's. We don't charge. We are fine sponsors. Pay for it. You don't need to. Always free. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Yeah, I agree. The NEX video is superb. I have never had battery life issues on, maybe you just have a crappy DSLR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett is here, travel guru. He steered me right. We went to Hawaii, and I asked Johnny, and he said, you should try the Hotel Travassa out there at the on the point, the eastern point of Maui in the Hana rainforest. We stayed there 3 days on a spur of the moment, by the way. We decided, we were about to leave. We called the airline, changed our tickets, called the hotel, said, do you got room for us? And drove out the road to Hana.
Beautiful.
We traded in our, because, you know, I had we had six people because I had my daughter and her best friend, and Lisa had her son and his best friend. And we, so we had a van. We traded that in for a Jeep, four-wheel drive, two-seater, and drove out the road to Hana. And boy, did we have fun.
Oh, you were at the Wailea Grand Villas, right?
Yes.
Okay. The pool there is amazing, right?
Amazing pool. Grand Wailea is a beautiful hotel. But Wailea has, I haven't been there in 20 years. It's turned into Waikiki.
I know. It's a problem.
It's heavily populated and very touristy. So it was great with the kids. But as soon as we put the kids on the plane, we went to the more romantic side of the island.
Well, that's beautiful.
Oh, it was gorgeous.
Well, I saw that Lisa was checking in at LAX right when I was flying up to where I am right now.
Oh, we just missed you.
I know. I'm in Alberta. Banff.
Banff!
Canada.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Show us out your window. Banff is the most beautiful place in the world, and I've never been there.
It is one of the most beautiful places.
Better to go in the summer than the winter.
Can you see it?
Yeah. That is gorgeous. We're looking out at a giant peak, the Canadian Rockies. And is Lake Louise on the other side?
We're actually headed up there. And then right after this, we're going up to Lake Louise, which is 45 minutes away. Yesterday, we were at the Calgary Stampede.
You went to the Stampede?
You can get everything deep fried. It's like a Texas State Fair. Deep fried. You can get deep fried Twinkies, Snickers, Reese's, butter. You get deep fried butter.
Calgary is cowboy country. People don't know that, but it's
big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
And they
it's
have
definitely
a
beautiful place.
Heck of a rodeo. Yeah.
Weather has been perfect, and the rodeo, it was the first time I ever went to a rodeo, and it was a lot of fun.
It's fun.
Big time.
Stampede is a week long, right? It goes on for a while.
10 days.
Yeah, 10 days, yeah.
So come on up. It's over Sunday, but...
Too late this year, but think about it for next year. Yeah, I've always wanted to do that.
But I got some deals for you, by the way. I'm about to send my deals newsletter, and I was just doing some research right before I logged on, and there's a deal from Newark to St. Lucia, 197 round trip.
Oh, there's a lot of New Yorkers headed out to St. Lucia.
and that's in September. And there's also one for Philadelphia to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to play golf. $72 round trip on American. U.S. Airways.
So are these like clearance deals? I mean, that's September. That's distant from now. Why do they do a deal? I mean, aren't they going to sell that seat by then?
Well, that's why you don't want to buy your tickets way in advance unless you're going over Christmas or Thanksgiving and you have set dates. This is a slow period. It's right after the schools go back. So no one's really traveling except business travelers. So they're trying to fill the back of the bus.
Can you go to the airline and say, hey, I see you have it for $72. Can I change? No.
No.
They got you.
The thing is, you want to sign up to deals newsletters. And that's why I have a deals newsletter. So whenever I see deals like this, I'll send them out. I usually send out three a week.
Johnny, but, and it's free?
Yeah, of course it's free.
JohnnyJett.com.
Yep, but I mean, and also there's a lot of other great sites you want to sign up for. Airfare Watchdog, the flight deal, and sign up to whatever airlines you want to fly because they'll also alert you. Although mine actually come out usually about 18 hours before the airlines. I don't know why they're so slow in sending their newsletters.
How do you
website?
So you said you did the research and you found this. How do you find these?
Well, like for example, you go to AmericanAirlines.com and you
look on the site.
Yeah, and you hit. You know, their travel deals, and right at the top, if there's a sale, there'll be a link to it.
And but you don't have to do that because Johnny goes to every darn site,
exactly,
collates them, and puts it in his free newsletter.
That's right. But so I have actually last week I went through San Francisco because I was flying on Virgin America.
Love Virgin America, my favorite airline.
It's always nice. Wins best airline in America.
In the U.S.
But anyway,
yeah.
And I'm doing a promotion with them for a travel app called Heron Biz. Have you heard of it?
Heron Biz, no.
So it's only on iOS, which is a downfall of it. But so they're connecting. It's kind of like Facebook for business travelers, and you can see who's nearby and see if someone's on your flight, and that way you can try and get some, you know, maybe network and do some business together.
There's a number of these kinds of apps like Highlight and stuff.
But Virgin America, I think, is invested in this, and so has Gogo in-flight.
See, that's
Wi-Fi.
What you want to see. You want to see something that's got some staying power. And that the key on this, just like Facebook, is the more people that use it, the better it is.
And that, without a doubt. Yeah. So on my flight, I didn't meet anyone on the flight who was networked on it, but I did meet some people in the airport.
Try Tinder. I find that's no, just teasing.
They just say teasing. This is the Tinder of business traveler, except you're not hooking up.
We're both taken, girls. Sorry. So we don't, right. I tried Tinder once, just not for research, obviously. Not
right.
And it's a meat market. It's what it is.
I know.
It's
I know.
The way the app works is if you say, hey, you're cute, and they say to your pick, because you put a picture on there, hey, you're cute, then it'll connect you and you can meet.
The kids got it too easy these days.
I'll tell you, in my day, you actually had to court somebody. You had to come a-courting.
All right, I've got one more.
You had to talk to her pop, and he had a shotgun. It wasn't easy in those days. What else you got for us, Johnny Jet?
Genius Scan. Have you heard of this one?
No.
So one time I mentioned Sign Easy, which I really love, to sign contracts.
Yes.
Well, this one is you can scan documents. So if you need, if you're talking to someone and they're like, hey, please send me this contract back, or not even a contract or whatever it is, you need something scanned. You can just take your phone, take a picture of it, and it will put it in a PDF file, lickety split, and it's free.
I like it.
And actually, my wife, who's behind me sneezing, is the one who turned me on.
It's from Grizzly Labs. And if we were talking about Tinder, I don't think she's sneezing exactly.
Well, she didn't
hear that part. Genius Scan. This is iOS and Android. Also available on Windows, which is kind of nice if you have a Surface or one of the Windows tablets.
And I have a Windows phone, actually. I have a Lumia Icon, which I love for the photos.
Yeah. This is really, I mean, that again, people don't need to buy scanners. They don't need to buy camcorders. They almost don't need to buy a computer. Everything's in these smartphones these days.
It's insane.
So you're going to be in Banff for how long?
I'm leaving tomorrow night. I was only here. I only came up for a long weekend. It's only a 2.5 hour flight from L.A. 2 hours from San Francisco.
I got back from Maui. We went down to Los Angeles to go to a party with one of our clients. Oxford Road Media was an amazing party in L.A. And then we flew back, and I thought, this is Johnny Jett's life every day. I don't understand how he does it. I mean, all that flying, I was going crazy. I have a good novel. Have a good novel. That's my recommendation.
A novel?
Yeah. You've heard of that. Fiction.
It's a 50-minute flight.
I didn't read the whole thing. By the way, we went to a party, Oxford Road, through an anniversary party at a little club in L.A. called No Vacancy down in Hollywood. Have you ever been to that club?
No, I don't know L.A. very well.
So you go up the stairs. It's amazing. You go up the stairs. The bouncer says, all right, we're going to let you in. You go up the stairs. And you go, and you're going down a long hall, and there's a room. You open the room, and there's a young woman, scantily clad. She says, "Welcome to my house, in bed of ill repute." And she says, "I've identified you as a mover and shaker, so we're going to allow you in." She presses a button, the bed slides over. There's a staircase down into the club.
Dude, I'm going there tonight.
It was fun.
Sunday night.
No Vacancy. Hey, thank you, Johnny Jett. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. His website, johnnyjett.com.
See you later.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. We say hi to Diego in Fullerton, California, our next caller. Hi, Diego.
Hi, Leo. How are you? Glad to have you back.
It's wonderful to be back. I had a great vacation, but I love doing this show. So, and this sounds phony, but it's true. I kind of missed it. So I'm glad to be back. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm currently in a dilemma in between buying the upcoming iPhone 6 or just picking up the Galaxy S5.
It is a dilemma because we don't know what the iPhone offers. We know what the S5 does because it's out. You'd be waiting till September at the earliest, I think, to get an iPhone 6.
I have an iPhone 4S right now, and I have a MacBook Pro. So I'm a little religious into a Mac products, but I don't know if I should move over to Galaxy.
You know, at this party the other night, a guy walked up to me and said, "You're Leo Laporte, huh?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Tell my mom, Barbara, that it's okay to buy an iPhone. Everybody in the family has an iPhone, but Barbara says, no, Leo says you got to go Android. And she has an Android phone." I don't have a particularly strong bias. I carry an Android phone. I waited in line for 6 hours to get the first iPhone, and I had every iPhone, still have had every iPhone, including the 5C. But I switched over to Android because of the flexibility the Android operating system offers. However, I'm very intrigued by what Apple seems to be doing with iPhone. They announced a number of interesting things with iOS 8, I guess it'll be 7, I don't know, the next version of iOS, which will presumably come out with a new iPhone. I think the fingerprint reader that they've done on the 5S is very intriguing. It's, of course, the best camera phone out there, I think, still, and I imagine will get better. So if you are an iPhone lover and you're in the Mac Apple ecosystem, because really that's what it's come down to now, by the way, is Amazon, Google, and Apple all have, and I guess to some degree Microsoft, all have their own ecosystems. And once you kind of buy into it, you're stuck. So you bought a lot of apps, for instance, on the iPhone. Those won't work on Android. Now, the good news is it's not a big deal changing. I don't think it's a big deal. It's not very expensive. Most apps are either very inexpensive or free. So you're not going to spend more than, say, $40 or $50 if at most to move into the Android world. And all your music and stuff will still work. So, but I don't like the S5 because they've junked it up. And I think, really, if you look at the iPhone versus the Galaxy, that's a very stark difference. I'm not a Galaxy fan because I did have Galaxy phones for years. But I feel like Samsung has gone, like many PC manufacturers, they've started loading up extra junk on there that I'm just not a fan of. So given that you're an iPhone user now, I know your 4S is feeling pretty old at this point. If you can wait 3 months, that's what you're going to have to do. You know, you're going to have to wait at least 3 months.
Right. I mean, I take care of my 4S. I luckily have not cracked the screen at all, but I think I would probably wait 3 months for the iPhone 6.
I would at least wait and see. I can't promise the iPhone 6 will be a compelling package, but if given that you're an iPhone user, I see no reason to change. So it's just timing, you know? It's just, can I wait that long? And since you sound like you can, then I would. And Barbara, you can get an iPhone if you want. You don't. Everybody who calls, I listen carefully to what you say, and I try to give you an answer that's appropriate for you. There is no perfect phone, any more than there's a perfect computer or a perfect spouse. You just have to, everybody has different needs. So I think it sounds like, Diego, you should wait for the new iPhone, absolutely. And I'm frankly, as I've used Android now for a couple of years, I skipped the iPhone 5 and the 5. I bought it, but I didn't end up staying with it, and the 5S. So it's been a couple of years, but I'm looking with great interest to see what Apple does. This sapphire screen that we talked about, that could be a deal maker just because it's not going to scratch or break. Wow, that's good. The fact that Apple's opened up the fingerprint reader, other applications, maybe my bank will start using it and I don't have to use a complicated password and all that. That would be nice. The health kit that Apple's talked about, the ability to track things, maybe in conjunction with an iWatch. All of these things could put me over the top, but we don't know till these are announced, and that'll be this fall. Typically, iPhones are announced in September. But announced does not mean available for sale. There's often a gap, so maybe even as late as October. That might be how long you're waiting. Joe in Van Nuys, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hey, Leo, you are the man.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed your vacation. I tried last week and I got in line, but then they lost time. So I'm glad I got on today. I've been on for an hour and 45 minutes, and I think you are going to be worth it.
I hope so.
So here's my question. I have about 300 or 400 DVDs in my collection, and I want to buy one of those Seagate external hard drives.
Right.
And I don't know how much space a DVD is, or how many of mine can I put on a Seagate, you know, external.
Well, let me talk about this a little bit, because there's a couple things to know. First of all, the discs themselves are 4.7 gigabytes for a single-sided DVD. These are not Blu-ray. These are regular DVDs, right?
That's right. Uh-huh.
And then many DVDs are more than that because they use both sides. It could be as much as 9.4 gigabytes. But that's without changing the compression at all. That's just copying the DVD. And by the way, to do this, you'll need special software because the DVDs have copy protection on them. It's easy to bypass. But so if you want to keep the DVD exactly as is, including all of the menus, the special features, all of that stuff, estimate somewhere around 6 or 7 gigabytes per movie.
Okay.
But I don't recommend doing that. I recommend getting a program, free program called Handbrake, H-A-N-D-B-R-A-K-E, like a handbrake on a car. It's from handbrake.fr. Re-encoding those. What it will do is it'll take the movie. It doesn't save the extras unless you ask it to. It doesn't save the menu structure or anything. Just keeps the movie. Uh-huh. And it gets the movie down to about a gigabyte for a two-hour movie.
Uh-huh.
Now, in same quality. So now you can store a lot more movies, like 6 or 7 times the number of movies on the same space.
Uh-huh.
So it depends. If you want the full DVD with the extras and the menus and the whole thing, estimate about 6 or 7 gigabytes per disc. If you just want the movie in same quality but just want to watch the movie, a gigabyte per disc.
Okay.
All right.
And as far as the Seagate, external drive goes.
Yeah, a terabyte is cheap. It's under $100. That's what I would go with, a terabyte, maybe two. You can get up to three. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour three. Hour three of the Tech Guy Show. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. You can use Skype to call us if you're not in the U.S. or Canada. It won't cost you anything. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hummon answering the phones, taking your calls, lining them up so I can knock them down. Starting with Julian in Santa Barbara. Hi, Julian. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. Love the show. This is Julian.
Thank you, Julian.
I had a real simple question. I travel with a laptop all the time. I'm absent-minded. I'm perfectly capable of leaving it on the plane. I just use Microsoft BitLocker for the main hard drive, a Lenovo laptop, and I have a Seagate old-fashioned, you know, spinning disk drive. And I thought with BitLocker I was pretty safe. And then I heard you this morning talking about all these other ways of encrypting your hard disk. Do I need to worry, or is BitLocker adequate?
It is more than adequate. And by the way, you're not alone. 12,000 laptops are lost in airports every week. Not every month, not every year, every week. So this is a laptop. It's very common. In fact, you probably remember the British government had some employees who were storing secret documents on their laptop, left them somewhere, lost them, and a goodly amount of British government secrets were lost.
Yeah, I think it was the plans for Gulf War II. Some British army officer just left them in a laptop, in a cab.
In a cab! So this is a very common thing. BitLocker, which is the built-in encryption that comes with higher-end versions of Windows, Enterprise, and Pro, is very good. Apple's Macintosh has File Vault, same thing. The only issue on these two that I'll raise, and it's not a significant issue in my opinion, is that they're not open source. We don't know how exactly they do the encryption. More to the point, we don't know if governments have not requested backdoors or access somehow. So, because, you know, the only, in my opinion, encryption you can truly trust is open source encryption that can be audited, because then you know there's no governmental backdoor. Whether Microsoft or Apple have given the NSA, for example, keys, we don't know. I wouldn't worry about that. If you're a terrorist, maybe you should consider that. But if you're just a normal gent who doesn't want prying eyes looking at his contents of his hard drive, BitLocker is more than adequate. It's strong encryption. Now, the thing with BitLocker, you got to remember, when you encrypt the disk, it says, now, would you like me to save those keys? It's a certificate-based encryption system. You cannot lose those certificates. Even if you know the password, if you don't have the certificate, you will never be able to unencrypt that drive. You'll have to go to the NSA and ask them. But otherwise, you're safe, Julian.
I back up pretty regularly in my office.
And back up not only the contents of the drive, because you're backing up encrypted contents, but also the certificates. Very important to save those in a safe place.
Yeah, but all I was saying was, if I lost my laptop,
what I care is
nobody else.
You wouldn't
can get
care.
Into it.
You wouldn't care. Now, if they can get your password to log in, as you know with BitLocker, once you're logged into your account, your contents are visible. So make sure you use a good password. Because if they have your laptop, that's the other thing. Once they have physical access, they can try to brute force it. If your password is monkey123, inevitably they'll try that and they'll get in. But if you've used a good password that only you know and only you can remember that is fairly random, then you're fine. And so I suggest and a lot of times the temptation with a Windows password, and Windows 8 makes this really easy, they let you choose a 4-digit passkey. That's not good. 4 digits is 10,000 possible combinations. That's not good. You should use a strong full password, not a 4-digit open it up, and it should use a password to come back from wake from sleep, wake from shutdown. Should always have the password and make sure it's random. A good way to do this is pick the first sentence of your favorite book. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times, and use that or something you can easily type. But it won't be easily guessed. Does that make sense?
Thank you. Yeah, no, it all makes total sense. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Julian. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you. 12,000 laptops left in airports every week. Most are never returned. So, in fact, the Department of Homeland Security is so concerned about so many laptops left behind. They're trying to let people know, don't leave your laptop on the belt. TSA says, we're not going to turn that laptop on. We are not going to try to analyze the hardware or anything like that. We're just, we'll keep it. We'll put it in the lost and found for 30 days. But after 30 days, they take the memory out, they take the hard drive out, they auction it off as surplus. It's government property. Go to gsa.gov if you want to buy one of those 12,000 lost laptops never recovered every week. So really, particularly if you're carrying your computer around, encrypt it. And that goes for your smartphone. How much of your valuable data is on your smartphone? It's a pain, I know, to unlock it, but it really is a good idea to encrypt it and use a strong password. Strong password, the trick on passwords is the more random and the longer, the better. So a 20-character completely random combination of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation, impossible to crack in not just a lifetime, within the lifetime of the universe. I mean, really good with existing computer hardware. But, of course, 20 characters completely random, who remembers that? So it's okay to use a passphrase. Put some punctuation in there, upper and lowercase. That's fine. Don't use it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. But that's not a bad password. With the spaces, with the commas, maybe put an exclamation mark at the end. And that's easy to remember. The first lyric of your favorite song. That's not as good as truly random, but it's pretty good. You want to get it better? Use just the first letters of the first word of your song and add some punctuation and some numbers. It's not a bad idea to take, for instance, I've mentioned this before, your childhood phone number. For some reason, that's something burned into our brains, right? Mom and Dad said, what's your phone number? What's your phone number? What's your phone number? So it's in our brains. 4269458. I remember it from when I was 6 years old, right? Add that to the end of any password. Now, it's highly unlikely that a bad guy is going to know your childhood password, phone number. But you're going to remember it. It's 7 additional numbers. It's not perfect. It shouldn't be your only password. Have a good password plus that. those extra seven characters are so good. They add so much protection. Length is very, very valuable. My friend Steve Gibson, our security guru, he does a security podcast on my Twit podcast network, calls it password padding. And it's a, you know, even if it's eight commas, it's just not something that's obvious, not guessable. It's not your only password. It's just making it that much longer, that much harder to crack. Have a good password. But it has to be, again, easy to remember, easy to type, because you're going to be typing it a lot. This is why people don't like passwords, because the ideal password is hard to remember and hard to type. And the more you need to do, and ideally it's always turned on, and the more you need to do it, the more likely you're going to put a post-it note on your screen, or you're going to use something easy, and that defeats the whole purpose. 8888-ASK-LEO. Is the phone number. You'd be surprised at how many people's password is password.
But I use the uppercase P.
No, not good. Mike Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Mike.
Oh. Hey, Leo, how you doing? I have a question. It's actually a Pennywise Pound Foolish I have behind.
Great. Hang on, because we're going to take a break a little bit. But I would love to answer that question right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I'm Leo Laporte,
the Tech Guy. Let's spend the afternoon together. Anyway, we'll have to see what happens tonight.
8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Mike in Santa Monica called and asked a Pennywise Pound Foolish question. Fire away, Mike.
Okay, I have. It's a question relating streaming video, Netflix and Amazon on my smart TVs. One's a 6300 Samsung 120. One's a 7100 Samsung 240.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an internet that runs about, I guess, I'm not even sure, two megabytes, you call it? You
know, 2 megabits.
Bits, okay.
That's pretty slow.
Right, I've got a standard, internet, and I've got wireless. I just bought a more powerful router.
Yeah.
And it's still hanging up. So, I mean, the bottom line is do I go to, you know, do I upgrade to 14, 15 megabits?
Two megabits is barely enough for streaming video.
Okay.
Now, nominally, it should be enough. A megabit should be enough.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is it's not consistently that speed. There's other stuff going on. There's upload and download speeds combined. And so the lowest cost internet, which is typically 1.5 to 2 megabits per second, is really kind of just on the edge of what you can get. Probably what's happening with Netflix anyway is it's downgrading the quality, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I had heard if I take my, again, terminology, if I take my modem and my router and bring it down where the TV is and hardwire the TV.
That might be, then you'd, so okay, that's another issue. But at that speed, wireless is as fast as or 2 megabits.
Okay.
But it is true that wireless is not as fast as wired. It could be the distance is making it even worse.
Yeah.
So that would be one test, is before you go out and buy expensive internet, is to see if when you're wired from your cable modem to the TV,
right,
or from the router to the TV, if that's better. Right. I know that's kind of a pain. I don't know how you would go about doing that, but that would be a worthwhile test. Maybe bring your computer down or a tablet and try it on that, just to see what am I getting if I'm wired in. You know, right. There's a site called speedtest.net. You could see what your speed is wired versus wireless. And it may be that your distance, the TV's distance. By the way, Samsung TVs, all TVs, they don't have great wireless receivers. So, in fact, generally, my experience with any TV smart apps is they don't work as well as the standalone devices like the Apple TV or the Roku. Those tend to have better radios, better quality processors, and so forth. So that's another way to perhaps improve it. But I have to say, you're right at the edge of the lowest speed I would recommend.
Yeah, well, you spend the money for the TVs, and then you can't. You know, everything gets hung up. You watch 10 minutes of it. And
it's frustrating. I agree.
One last question, Leo. Does the 120 versus the 240, does that have anything to do with
it? No. What that is, and I know I'm not crazy about either. A television signal, if you're watching over-the-air TV, is 30 frames a second, 60 fields a second, because it's interlaced. If you're watching a progressive DVD or something higher quality or streaming video. At best, 60 frames a second.
Okay.
When you have 120 or 240, what they're doing is they're sticking in what we call an interpolated frame in between. So they're saying, here's frame A, frame B. There's the distance between those is 1/60th of a second. We want to make it 1/120th of a second. The only way to do that, there's no extra information, is to double frame A.
Mm-hmm.
What that does is it gives you smoother motion. You don't get blurs, but it also gives you a strange plastic feel and look. Almost looks like a soap opera versus a movie. And 240 is even more interpolation, right? It's now adding several frames. So I generally don't like this interpolation. They do it because people with sports and action movies say it they don't see the judder or the jitter or the blur. But frankly, there's no data there, so they're making it up.
Right. Well, then, but most TVs now are at least 120.
Yeah, I just turn it off.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I don't like how it looks. Now, if it doesn't bother you and you're not noticing it, then leave it on. But it doesn't add to the burden of the bandwidth. You're still only getting 60 frames at best a second.
And then if you go with Time Warner, versus an outside, somebody else, how does it, when you use a third party, how does it go over the internet? Do they use your cable?
They're not allowed to use your cable. So the FCC, in their infinite wisdom, has said cable companies can lock down access to the cable. You have two big fat pipes coming into your house, your telephone line and your cable line.
Right.
Cable companies do not have to share. Phone companies do.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to get another internet service provider besides your phone, your incumbent phone carrier or your cable company, you're going to have to use the phone lines. And it's going to somebody like DSL Extreme, they go in, they put a switch in AT&T's center, and then they have access to internet through that, but it's still coming through AT&T's phone lines. Your incumbent carrier owns those lines. Cable company, it's the cable company and nothing else.
Right, because DSL Extreme is the one that you recommend.
Yeah, and their basic, the inexpensive plan we talk about, I can't remember, it's $12.95 a month. That's, I think, a megabit and a half. It's not super fast. It's fine for people. This is what's happened. Is it in the old days, email? Gosh, when I first started getting online, a megabit and a half would have blown my mind. Yeah. For email and surfing, it's fine. But now we want to watch high-def video. You need, I would say, you want 5 megabits a second or more.
Right. Okay, well, great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. What's happened is our expectations have changed, haven't they? 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Tom in Warren, Ohio's next. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. How's it going in California today?
It's a beautiful day. Let me check my watch. Yes, it's a beautiful
Oh, yeah.
Hey, hang on the line.
Smart device.
Yeah, thank goodness. I wouldn't know, We're going to take a break, come back with more right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Let me see. I can't look outside the window.
Actually, I can. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tom's on the line, Warren, Ohio. Thanks for being patient. What can I do for you?
Yes, Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm headed your way on Wednesday, and I'd like to clear some space on my phone with photos and videos that are numerous on there. And I was experimenting a little bit with YouTube. I uploaded a couple of there, and then when I deleted it on my phone, YouTube deleted it off my channel. So I wasn't expecting that. So
I'm not expecting that either. So here's the thing. YouTube doesn't put anything on your phone. YouTube isn't downloadable. So when you have a YouTube video on your phone and you delete it, you're not deleting it on your phone. Now, you're saying, if you uploaded a video from your phone to YouTube.
On my phone, exactly.
Deleted it. Okay, and then how did you delete it on your phone?
Just went into my photo library and went to videos and clicked on it, hit trash can, and it deleted it. And I looked back on YouTube, and it says video deleted.
I guess it's syncing with YouTube. Thank you, Apple.
Something like that. Yeah, I didn't expect that.
I wouldn't expect that either. That doesn't seem very friendly. Yeah, because it's certainly easy to think of a scenario where you wouldn't want it on your phone anymore because it's on YouTube. And you don't need to keep it on your phone. And what you didn't expect is that deleting it on the phone would delete it on YouTube.
Now, I did upload some to Google Drive. I did a few of those pictures, and then it kept the pictures even once I deleted the picture off my phone.
Yeah, it should.
The video didn't want to cooperate.
That's very... that doesn't sound right. Chat room, is that the case with an iPhone, that it will delete your video on YouTube? Had it fully uploaded? Was it a while?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was on there. I watched the video on YouTube. I played a few of them, and I said, well, I can delete them off my phone now. I delete, and then the ones I deleted, I think it was more than one. I deleted, I think, a couple, two or three.
Man, that's really not good behavior.
No. This technology. Well, you live and you learn, so we got to figure out a solution.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, this isn't how it should happen, and you can delete still pictures without that problem. When you're deleting it on the iPhone, you're doing it from the iPhone gallery, right? The photos.
Yeah, the photos.
So this is something the iPhone is doing, not Google. It sounds like something the iPhone is doing. And remember, the iPhone does have tight integration with YouTube. That's part of it.
YouTube, yeah.
I'm wondering, when you shot the video, were you using the YouTube Capture app, or were you using the built-in?
No, I know what you're talking about, YouTube Capture. No, I just went right. I think I might have been in Google Plus or something. Or no, I was on YouTube. I was on YouTube, and I went to my account, and it said, you know, upload photos and videos. So I said, yeah, I'll upload some videos, clear up some space on my phone.
So if you use the Capture app, that will do that, because they're tightly linked. But if you use the Capture app to shoot the video, use the iPhone's own video mode to shoot the video, it shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I was just on YouTube itself. I wasn't on the Capture one. I was just on YouTube.
Oh, you captured it within the YouTube app?
No, it was, I did it right with my phone.
You captured it with the iPhone directly.
iPhone camera.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. Anyway,
I don't think that's the normal default behavior, and so far nobody in the chat room thinks so either, but that's certainly not good behavior. So my recommendation is, before you delete anything more, you sync your iPhone, or you back it up to iCloud, so that everything that is in your photos album, all your videos and pictures, are backed up. And then delete. It doesn't seem like a good idea. And I'm not sure what's going on. It does sound like there's some undocumented connection between the iPhone's videos and YouTube. So get the before you do any more, the way I would say is, you should hook it up to a computer, get everything off of it, you know, back up your photos, back up your videos, put them in iPhoto, and then use the computer to delete the videos and the photos. It's a great idea, by the way, and people don't do this. Before you go on a trip, as you are, to delete the photos on your iPhone. So many iPhones, even though you have lots of space, are full of photos from years ago. Back them up onto your computer or iCloud if you want, and delete them. Remember, Photo Stream right now is limited to 1,000 photos. Apple's going to change that with the new Photos app. I'm not sure if we have to wait to the spring when the Photos app comes out, or if this will happen with iOS 8 when it comes out in the fall, but Apple's going to give you unlimited photo backups, which is a great thing. Right now, though, only the last 1,000 pictures are saved. So back it up onto your hard drive. And then clear out your phone so you're ready for your trip. I did that before I went to Hawaii. Greg in Camarillo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you. Love your shirt.
My old ZD television shirt. This goes back
a ways.
Old school.
Well, I got a couple questions for you.
Yes, sir.
I've got a son who is in music production, kind of like your son. And he's got about 2 terabytes of information. And
wow.
He is going to put everything on hold and go on a mission for 2 years.
Awesome.
And we want to make sure to keep all this data safe.
Yes.
How would you recommend to do that?
I would get 2 hard drives, both sufficient to store the data, in this case 2 terabytes. Keep one at home, one at the office. If you have 2 copies of something, and then I wouldn't delete the original. Is it on a laptop he's bringing on a mission?
No.
Okay, he's leaving the laptop at home, right?
Yeah, he's got one copy on his Mac Pro.
Okay.
And then he's got another copy, and we're thinking about another copy.
Yeah, get one more copy off-site. That way you're safe. Don't put it online because 2 terabytes would take forever to upload.
Okay.
You can, Carbonite, our sponsor, and others allow you to mail them a hard drive, but you don't. That's generally, these online solutions are not for such a huge amount of data storage. They're really designed for smaller amounts because your upstream bandwidth isn't sufficient. It would take months to get 2 terabytes up there. So just get a second hard drive. It's fast. You can copy it over a couple of hours. You'll have everything on there and then bring it to work. Now you have offsite.
Okay. All right. And one more question. I've got a 4 to 5 year old laptop, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of guessing that the days are probably numbered. And I'm going out looking for new ones, and the new chips don't seem to be that much more improved than what I've got going on already.
In pure gigahertz, they're not. What Intel found out, they had planned 4 gigahertz and up chips, and they found they were not reliable. There's too much heat generated. They couldn't get any faster. So what they've done, instead of making the chip speeds faster, is they've added more cores. So you'll notice quad core, in some cases 8 core and more. That's not really the same thing as having a faster processor. So you're absolutely right. The biggest difference that they've made in the newer chips is they've added more L2 cache. Having a lot of L2 cache does speed up the chip. But frankly, for desktop computing, for home computing, for laptop computing, we're kind of we're done. There's nothing coming along that's going to demand more than a 2 or 3 gigahertz chip. So if you've got dual core or quad core and you've got, say, 2 megabytes of L2 cache, you probably never, I should never say never, but you can buy a laptop now. It's not going to be much faster, but it's going to, it will be more reliable because it's not 5 years old. I really feel like we've kind of hit the end of the line on single core speeds. They're not going to get faster.
Hmm. Would you wait for this thing to die or just replace it?
I'd wait for it to die. It may surprise you. Just make sure it's backed up. Keep it backed up, but you understand that. Thank you, Greg. Great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
One of them modern, straight out of the canned music factory songs.
Leo Laporte, what are you laughing at? It is, though, isn't it? They all sound the same nowadays. All songs sound the same. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Why are you laughing? Who was that, Heather?
I have no idea, but I agree with you because it sounds like that new kind of country sound.
It's that manufactured. It's probably Daughtry or something like that. But Daughtry is a person, but it's a band. I'm confused. Anyway, 8888 Ask Leo. Well, this is the last segment of the day. You know what that means? Two things. A, I get to go home in 15 minutes. And B, it's Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer and the Giz Whiz.
Hey, Dick. Scott, how you doing?
I am not Scott.
Oh, his plan failed.
His evil plan to take over the show failed.
Oh, my gosh.
Dick is Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer. For many a year, he's also the Gizwiz, yes. And he joins us each week to talk about gadgets.
I have a question for you. Is there a picture of you on Facebook in the past 2 weeks where you're not holding a drink?
Often with umbrellas.
Yes, exactly. Every time I say, well, he's having a good time. Well, he's having a good time.
I did not drink to excess, I'm proud to say. I would have one, umbrella drink a day. Which is plenty, because then I'd have to take a nap.
Yeah, but it was a full-size umbrella, gives an idea of the size of the drink.
They come in tiki bowls. But my favorite was called the Lava Flow, and it was coconut puree, pineapple puree, strawberry puree, and then some undetermined amount of rum.
Well, I like it already.
And it got my lava flowing, I could tell you. Hey, how you doing, Dickie D?
I'm doing super, sir.
What do you got for us?
I've kind of a fun gadget. I was at CE Week here in the city, kind of a mid-year mini CES kind of thing. And I was walking by and a guy said, hey, look, I have a Bluetooth device for your smartphone. Ah. So you can fly use the shutter remotely. And I said, sir, there are a lot of those on the market. And he said, where is your Bluetooth shutter? I said, in a drawer, maybe on a shelf. And he said, well, that's why you'll like my version, because it's built into the phone case.
I saw a picture, I think it was on Facebook, of you taking a selfie with this thing.
Yes, it's kind of clever. It's from iLove, spelled I-L-U-V, yeah. And it's the iLove Selfie. I don't know how no one had taken selfie as a trade name already, but they evidently got it. So what it is, it's a Bluetooth shutter that slides into the back of the case. And then when you are out, you just slide that guy out and you can remotely trip the shutter up to about 30 feet. But wait, there's more. Leo, they make a whole line of accessories that now when you slide the little Bluetooth shutter out, there's a slot on the back of your phone where the device was. They make a tripod that slides into that.
Oh, I like that.
They make a camera mount for your bike. They make a camera mount for your helmet. So I think it's a very clever idea. The phone case, obviously.
It's a little dorky to have your smartphone on your helmet.
Your head. Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah, I know. You have one of those lava umbrella drinks. You don't care what you look like.
After three lava flows, you'll put anything on your head.
Exactly. Yeah. So the case is under $50. And, of course, they're phone specific. So they have the iPhone 5.
Does it add a lot of bulk to the phone?
It does. You know, there's no question about it. But if you don't have a case at all, it's not a bad-looking case. And, you know, it's the kind of thing, if I'm going out to with friends or to a picnic, I would just snap that case on, and then I would have the little shutter with me. If I was going,
I'm not a big selfie guy. You take a lot of selfies?
No, I'm not either. Yeah. No, but this is good for group shots where you can be in the group
shot. If I were as good looking as this bunch here visiting us in the studio today, as Andrew Zarian and his crew, I would take a lot of selfies.
Oh, my God. Andrew is there?
Do you know
my
Andrew?
Yeah. He has come to the meetups many times.
You should interview him today on the GizFizz.
I think that is the plan.
It's my evil plan to keep him from going to Napa, where he really wants to go.
Okay.
Instead of drinking wine, he could be talking to you. And his poor wife and their friends are just going to be stuck here while he gets to be on stage.
No, it's fun. He'll like it.
So this is called the selfie, not with an IE, which is how you spell selfie, but with a Y. S-E-L-F-Y. Exactly. And where can I get it?
You can get it on Amazon.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Or you can just follow the links on my website. And if you want the tripod, the little tripod insert is $20 extra.
Gizwiz.biz, that's Dickie D's website. You'll see all the stuff he shows on ABC's World News Now, the gadgets he mentions on our show, and his podcast, The Gizwiz. And you can also play the What the Heck Is It contest. So did you, I wasn't here. What was that plastic sawmill device? What was that?
That thing is called the Loop. Actually, one person got it. The Loop is you hang your earbuds over the little hook in the middle there. Then you wrap the rest of the earbud cable around that device. And then you hook it into any one of those.
That's not a bad idea.
No,
so it's a headphone. What do we call that? A headphone organizational management.
Yeah,
management. Exactly. I'm going to manage my headphones. And now we have a new close-up picture of some unknown gadget.
Yes. The trick, and Leo, this is the most fun for me because I don't know what it is.
Well, somebody gave this to you and said?
No. Well, I go through Amazon sometimes and I just pick out weird-looking stuff and I order it.
Uh-huh.
And this came in a box, just in a box. No label, no instructions.
So, wait a minute. This is something you ordered, but you have no idea what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't Amazon. It was one of those places in China where they said, we make these things. And I said, oh, send me that, and that.
So, really, if you go to gizwiz.biz and you play the What the Heck Is contest, you're actually doing Dick a favor.
Yes, exactly.
He has no idea what this. Well, it looks like a tongue depressor for people with two mouths. That would be my guess.
Oh, that's an excellent answer. Yeah. Send that in. I'll send you Mad.
He's got 12 Mad magazines autographed by Dickie D himself for the correct answer, 24 for the best incorrect answer. The rules and all the information on the website, gizwiz.biz. And these run for 2 months, so you have to the end of August.
Exactly.
You know, it's nowadays, I shouldn't tell you this, but there's a way that you could do this pretty quickly. All right, I'm the tech guy. I got to tell everybody.
All right.
Google, you can drag an image to Google image search and it'll match it.
Okay.
I hope I haven't ruined the what the heck.
No, that's okay. No, that's okay.
This thing, I don't know. I think it's a mystery.
That's why I take my own photos as opposed to because if you take a shot from the web, then it's really easy for Google to match.
That's true, because Google won't have seen this particular image before. So you knew about this loophole.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. All right. That's okay.
I haven't told you anything that you didn't know.
No, that's okay.
Dickie D.
Just didn't spread it to 1.5 million people.
Well,
I only told Myra. I did not tell the other million.
Well, all right. So I'm not such a nice person. Stick around. Dick's going to do the Giz Fizz right after the radio show on our Twit Network.
Giz Fizz 100.
His 100th Giz Fizz. He will also host every week. Thursdays now, right?
Soon. Right
soon
now,
to be Thursdays.
Yeah.
For the weekly. You know what? Okay, I did the thing. I dropped it in the Google image search. You know what the only result is? Your website.
It's a riot. That happens all the time. I'm saying, I need more details about this device. I type it in. My website.
You're the only guy who's ever talked about this thing. And then it gave me a bunch of pictures of the same color blue plates, shoes, bowls, shoehorns. It's none of those either.
That's
so that trick is not going to work on whatever this thing is.
Great.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
Stick around. Lots more to come. With Dick, not with me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.